playing you the pop music you love on VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's show, Gina Bennett brings us a very informative Ask a Teacher. We also hear reports from John Russell and Mario Ritter Jr. And we close the show with an American story. We will hear The Romance of a Busy Broker by O. Henry. But first, we go to Dan Novak.
German software developer Andreas Freund was running performance tests last month when he noticed strange behavior in a little-known program. He decided to look into it. What he found frightened those in the software world and drew attention from tech executives and government officials. Freund works for Microsoft in California. He discovered that the latest version of the open-source software program XZUtils had been sabotaged by one of its developers. The action could have created a secret door to millions of servers across the internet. Freund noticed the change before the latest version of XZ became widely used. His observation, security experts say, helped save the world from a digital security crisis. The near miss has recentered attention on the safety of open source software. Open source software is free. Volunteers often maintain the programs. Their openness means they serve as the foundation for the internet economy. Many such projects depend on a small number of unpaid volunteers working on fixes and improvements. XZ is a collection of file compression tools for the Linux operating system. It was long maintained by a single person, Lasse Collin. But in a message published in June 2022, Collin said he was dealing with mental health issues. He suggested he was working privately with a new developer named Jia Tan. Update logs available through the open-source software site GitHub show that Tan's role quickly expanded. By 2023, the logs show Tan was using his code in XZ. It is a sign that he had won a trusted role in the project. But cybersecurity experts who have studied the logs say that Tan was only acting like a helpful volunteer. Over the next few months, they say, Tan introduced a nearly invisible backdoor into XZ. Tan did not return messages sent to his email account. Reuters has been unable to find out who Tan is, where he is, or who he was working for. But many people who have examined his updates believe Tan is a pseudonym for an expert hacker or a group of hackers. Experts say Tan was likely working for a powerful intelligence service. Tan could easily have gotten away with the actions if Freund had not noticed something unusual. He noticed the latest version of XZ sometimes using an unexpected amount of processing power on the system he was testing. Microsoft did not make Freund available for an interview. But in publicly available emails and posts to social media, Freund said a series of easy-to-miss clues led him to discover the back door. The find really required a lot of coincidences, Freund said on the social network Mastodon. Among those in the open-source community, the discovery has been concerning. The volunteers who maintain the software that supports the internet are used to the idea of little pay or recognition. But the idea that they were now being hunted by well-resourced spies pretending to be volunteers was incredibly intimidating, said Omkar Arasaratnam. He is with the Open Source Security Foundation. For government officials, the incident has raised concerns about how to protect open source software. Assistant National Cyber Director Anjana Rajan told the online news organization Politico that there's a lot of conversations that we need to have about what to do next to protect open source code. Whatever the solution, almost everyone agrees the XZ incident shows that something must change. We got unreasonably lucky here, said Freund in another Mastodon post. We can't just bank on that going forward. I'm Dan Novak.
Tokyo visitors can now join a special tour of one of the Japanese city's modern wonders, its public toilets. Penelope Panchuk recently went on the Tokyo Toilet Shuttle for a two-hour visit of artistic public bathrooms. Panchuk got the idea after seeing Perfect Days, the Oscar-nominated film about a toilet cleaner in the city's Shibuya district. In the U.S. or in France, where I originally come from, you just don't go, Panchuk said of using public bathrooms. She added that in Tokyo, the bathrooms are extremely clean, they're very safe, and each one is so different it feels like it's a new discovery each time. The shuttle began in March, with visitors coming to Japan in record numbers. A drop in the value of the Japanese yen has made it less costly for many lovers of Japanese culture to visit for the first time. Among Japan's most loved technological exports in recent years are its toilets produced by Toto. The devices have cleansing sprays, heated seats, music, and more. The American animated comedy show South Park recently had a whole program on the toilets. Hip-hop music star DJ Khaled announced on Instagram that he appreciated a gift of 4 Toto bowls from the rapper Drake. The nonprofit Nippon Foundation started the Tokyo Toilet Project in 2020. It asked creators, including Pritzker Prize-winning architect Tado Ando, to develop new toilets. The goal was to increase accessibility and artistry in 17 public toilets in the Shibuya district. The project was not meant to be something foreign visitors would want to see, but Shibuya's government saw a chance to increase interest in the area beyond its famous street crossing. The highlight for visitors is that they can be driven around the less visited parts of Shibuya and enjoy the entire district while checking out the toilets, said Yumiko Nishi, a tourist association manager for the area. People on the tour pay $32.76 to visit 9 different toilets, including one with clear walls that turn opaque when users enter. Another is operated by voice commands. Takao Karino, visiting from Japan's western city of Osaka, wondered at the wide entrance of a facility created by British designer Miles Pennington. There's nothing else like this in Japan, 69-year-old Karino said about the tour. It's unusual. It's unique. It's honestly brilliant. I'm John Russell.
Peru's Andes Mountains might be home to the oldest person ever to have lived at the age of 124. The South American country's government has claimed that a man named Marcelino Abad Tolentino from the central area of Huánuco was born in 1900. If the claim is true, he would be the oldest independently verified human on Earth. Officials said in a statement that Abad developed a healthy way of life and inner peace, reflected in his good health and friendly personality. As a result, they said, this allowed him, with resilience and skill, to overcome 12 decades of life, and on April 5th, he just blew out 124 candles. Peruvian officials say they are helping Abad to contact Guinness World Records for independent verification. In a statement, the organization told Reuters, Guinness World Records receives many applications from individuals who claim to be the oldest living person. Verifying the claim would involve official documents and other evidence being carefully studied by a team of experts to prove their achievement beyond doubt. Guinness World Records currently lists Britain's John Tinniswood, a 111-year-old, as the oldest living man. The organization lists 117-year-old Maria Brañas Morera of Spain as the oldest living woman. As for the oldest living person ever, that record belongs to Jeanne-Louise Calment of France. She was born on February 21, 1875, and died on August 4, 1997, after living 122 years and 164 days. Abad was born in the small town of Chagia. He lived quietly until the Peruvian government identified him in 2019 and provided him with a pension. Abad says his secrets to living a long life include a diet rich in fruits and lamb meat. He also likes to chew coca leaves, a tradition in Peru's Andean communities. The information comes from the pension program that Abad is a part of. On April 5th, Abad celebrated his 124th birthday with a cake bearing his likeness at a home for senior citizens where he now lives. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from a reader in South Korea. Hello, dear my teacher. I'm Lim from South Korea. This year, 2024, there are many news reports about elections all over the world. I see the word fake news in many articles, but I can't tell the difference between disinformation and misinformation. Could you explain exactly the difference, showing different example expressions? I always thank you. Gyeongyeom Lim. Thank you for writing, Lim. This is a very good question. Mis and dis are both common prefixes in English. Prefixes are letters we add to the beginning of a word. Each prefix has a meaning. Adding a prefix to a word makes a new word with a new meaning. Let's start with mis and misinformation. Mis means bad or wrong. For example, add mis to adventure and we get the new word misadventure. A misadventure is an unlucky event or a bad adventure or experience. So, misinformation means wrong or bad information. Misinformation often comes from someone misunderstanding something. We often use misinformation with the phrase a lot of. For example, there is a lot of misinformation on the internet. Next, let's look at disinformation. Dis means not or none. For example, if we add dis to agree, the new word disagree means to not agree. It might seem like disinformation just means not information, but its meaning is more complex than that. Disinformation means false information that is spread on purpose. A person, group, or government can spread disinformation. Their goal is to hide the truth or trick people. We often use disinformation with the word campaign. For example, I hope the disinformation campaign does not work. Someone who spreads disinformation knows that the information is untrue. But when misinformation spreads, it is generally not done to deceive or trick people. We often use both misinformation and disinformation with the word spread. Note that spread can be a verb or a noun. For example, the internet spreads a lot of misinformation. The government should stop the spread of disinformation. We hope this explanation has helped you, Lim. Do you have a question about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish
at voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Gina Bennett.
You just heard this week's Ask a Teacher. Now Gina Bennett joins us for a chat about the report. Hi, Gina.
Hi, Katie.
Today's question asks about misinformation and disinformation. It also mentions fake news. I think we connect these ideas.
I think we do today. But did you know the phrase fake news is rather recent? We started using it around 2015.
I see. As a phrase, yes, I remember when it started growing popular. I mean, I'm sure the two words were put together in the past before that as well. But what about misinformation and disinformation?
Misinformation and disinformation have both been used since the 1990s or earlier. There's only been a small increase in their use since 2015.
Ah, so the term fake news is relatively new, but misinformation and disinformation are not. I don't know if that's good or bad, Gina.
Right? Hopefully we can avoid fake news, misinformation, and disinformation.
That's the aim. Well, I've got some real news to report.
Our chat time is over?
I'm afraid so. But thanks for coming on the podcast, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks for having me, Katie. Talk to you next time.
The Romance of a Busy Broker. Pitcher, who worked in the office of Harvey Maxwell, broker, usually allowed his face to show no feeling. This morning, he allowed his face to show interest and surprise when Mr. Maxwell entered. It was 9:30, and Mr. Maxwell was with his young lady secretary.
"Good morning, Pitcher," said Maxwell.
He rushed to his table as if he were going to jump over it, and began to look at the many, many letters and other papers waiting there for him. The young lady had been Maxwell's secretary for a year. She was very beautiful and very different from most other secretaries. Her hair always looked plain and simple. She did not wear chains or jewels. Her dress was gray and plain, but it fitted her very well. On her small black hat was the gold-green wing of a bird. On this morning she seemed to shine softly. Her eyes were dreaming, but bright. Her face was warmly colored and her expression was happy. Pitcher watched her. There was a question about her in his mind. She was different this morning. Instead of going straight to the room where she worked, she waited. She seemed not to know what to do. Once she went over to Maxwell's table, near enough for him to see that she was there. The machine sitting at the table was no longer a man. It was a busy New York broker.
"What is it? Anything?"
asked Maxwell shortly. Papers lay like snow covering his table. His gray eyes looked at her as if she were another machine.
"Nothing,"
answered the secretary, moving away with a little smile.
"Mr. Pitcher," she said, "did Mr. Maxwell talk to you yesterday about getting another secretary?"
"He did," Pitcher answered. "He told me to get another one. Several are coming to talk to us this morning, but it's now 9:00 and not one has appeared."
"I will do the work as usual," said the young lady, "until someone comes to fill the place."
And she went to her table. She took off the black hat with the gold-green bird wing and put it away as usual. If you have never seen a busy New York broker on a busy day, you know little about men at work. Every minute of a broker's hour is crowded, and this day was Harvey Maxwell's busy day. Beside his table stood a machine. From this came a long, narrow, endless piece of paper bringing him business news as soon as it happened. Men began to come into the office and speak to him. Some were happy, some were not. Some were in a hurry, Some were full of anger. Boys ran in and out with letters for him to read and answer at once. Pitcher's face now showed that he was alive. The other men who worked in the office jumped around like sailors during a storm. And there were storms in the business world, fearful storms. Every storm was felt in the broker's office. Maxwell moved his chair against the wall. Now he was like a dancer. He jumped from the machine to his table, to the door, and back again. In the middle of all this, he slowly realized that something had come near him. There was golden hair. There was a very large amount of it, high on a head. On top of the hair was a big hat covered with bird's wings. There was a long silver chain hanging from a neck until it nearly touched the floor, and among all these things, there was a young lady. Pitcher was beside her to explain. "Lady for that job is secretary," said Pitcher. Maxwell turned half around with his hands full of letters and paper from the machine.
"What job?" he asked.
"Job as secretary?" Pitcher said again. "You told me yesterday to have someone sent here this morning."
"Are you losing your mind, Pitcher?" said Maxwell. "Why should I tell you anything like that? Miss Leslie is a perfect secretary. She can keep the job as long as she wants it."
To the young lady, he said,
"There is no job here."
And to Pitcher, he added this order,
"Tell them not to send any more, and don't bring any more in here to see me."
The silver chain left the office, hitting chairs and tables with anger as it went. Pitcher said to another man in the office that Maxwell was more forgetful every day. The rush of business grew wilder and faster. Maxwell was working like some fine, strong machine. He was working as fast as he could. He never had to stop to think. He was never wrong. He was always ready to decide and to act. He worked as a clock works. This was the world of business. It was not a human world, nor the world of nature. When the dinner hour was near, things grew quieter. Maxwell stood by his table with his hands full of papers and his hair hanging over his face. His window was open, for it was the time of the year when the weather was beginning to turn warm. And through the window came a soft, sweet smell of flowers. For a moment, the broker was held there, without moving, for this smell of flowers belonged to Miss Leslie. It was hers, and hers only. The smell seemed almost to make her stand there before him. The world of business grew smaller and smaller, and she was in the next room, 20 steps away.
"I'll do it now," said Maxwell half aloud. "I'll ask her now. I wonder why I didn't do it long ago." He rushed into the other room. He stopped beside the secretary. She looked up at him with a smile. Warm color came into her face, and her eyes were soft and kind. Maxwell's hands were still full of papers. "Miss Leslie," he began quickly, "I have only a moment. I want to say something in that moment. Will you be my wife? I haven't had time to make love to you in the usual way, but I really do love you. Talk quick, please. I have to get back to my work."
"Oh, what are you talking about?" cried the young lady.
She rose to her feet and looked at him round-eyed.
"Don't you understand?" said Maxwell. "I want you to marry me. I love you, Miss Leslie. I wanted to tell you. So I took this moment when I wasn't too busy. But they're calling me now. Tell them to wait a minute, Pitcher. Won't you, Miss Leslie?"
The secretary acted very strangely. At first, she seemed lost in surprise. Then tears began to run from her wondering eyes. And then she smiled through her tears, and one of her arms went around the broker's neck.
"I know now," she said softly. "It's this business. It has put everything else out of your head. I was afraid at first. Don't you remember, Harvey? We were married last evening at 8 in the little church around the corner."
That's all the time we have for today's show, but join us again tomorrow for another VOA Learning English program. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan.